This is the June 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Chip Nellinger. He's with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Sherman Newland is here from Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois. And Garrett Toy joins us from AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the program online anytime you'd like. You can go to willag.org. That's our website at willag.org. You can click and play Commodity Week, the closing market report, other agricultural programming as well there. And you can also find information from the agricultural economists, the Farm Doc team from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, along with the animal scientist and the crop scientist, all at WILLAG.org. Garrett Toy, let's begin with you. We'll get a list of items that we probably should cover for the day. What's on your short list?
Well, obviously, first things first, this dryness that's the drought monitor is showing drought creeping into Illinois this week. And this is kind of the same area where NOAA issued a concern about a potential for a flash drought developing. The problem is at what point is U.S. weather, or how bad does U.S. weather have to get world exporters to get scared where they start cleaning up some of these cheaper South American supplies, because there's a lot of cheap South American supplies out there, and there's a lot of cheap wheat that can buy these end users some time near term.
Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities on your list?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, to start with, it's the weather, that's created this short-term rally that we're looking at right here. So we'll have to see what the forecast look like next week, and then see what the models, show on the extended side of it going forward. And I think, that's going to be the driver short-term, and then, the macro markets, how much are they affecting our commodity side of our markets.
And finally, Chip Dellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, to be redundant, weather. It's all about the weather right now. And also to reiterate Garrett's point, on the other side of that, it's demand and or the lack thereof. So we're kind of fighting between maybe a little bit of a bullish weather scenario, a little bit of a bearish demand scenario. It's increasing the volatility that we've got here in these grain markets.
Well, I'd like to follow up with that just a bit. Can you talk about the trade that we've had? Even on Thursday, there was just a huge trade in range, that is, for the soybeans. Where did that come from, and how do you put this variability, volatility within the marketplace in context?
Well, I think, Todd, to your point there about the volatility, this weather uncertainty really kind of coincided with the end of a month and the start of a new month. So these commodity funds have been making a lot of money being short, the grain markets, corn and wheat in particular. They've had a mass liquidation out of their longs in beans. We really going into the end of May extended some of these shorter term momentum indicators into heavily oversold territory. And then you had this uncertainty about this flash drought, this dry weather, the drought monitor. And so I think at the end of the month, as we turn the calendar to June, you saw a lot of short covering and evening up, and that kind of exaggerated the move. And so you're starting to see these daily ranges increase. And, along with that, right at the beginning of the new month, we've got the weather models. One, the Euro weather model has a much drier outlook. The GFS weather model has a wet outlook. And they kind of flip-flop back and forth a couple times a day, adding to or taking out the rain, and it increases the daily volatility. So on top of the weather uncertainty, you've got the end of a month, start of a new month, and a lot of extra fun business in there driving things.
And I do want to follow up and stay with weather, Sherman Newland, as I was looking at where rain has fallen and where it has not. The area that is the driest, these areas that were explained by Chip, which cross parts of eastern Iowa and Illinois, tends to appear that it's shrinking up, that there is rain to the west of those areas, there is rain to the east, and there's simply a long rectangle, mostly across the eastern half of Iowa, parts of Illinois, that just aren't getting rain at this moment. Will those two systems, do you think, will they back in? I know you're not a meteorologist. Will they back into each other? And I guess really the question is, how closely will the speculators watch them? And will they? When is it that they decide that, well, we've got enough coverage area, we don't have to worry about the U.S. crop, even if there are some dry places?
You know, a lot of that is going to be next week. I mean, there's some pretty prominent weather services out there that are pretty confident that, you know, starting about the 10th or a little bit shortly thereafter, that this is going to change and El Nino is going to set in. And, you know, we're going to start to get some rain come through here in the Midwest. I mean, been looking at some above normal precip for June, July, and August for a lot of southern Illinois, or, you know, half of Illinois and Iowa and, you know, parts of Indiana. I mean, they all seem to agree that maybe if there is going to be a spot that's going to catch less rain that they're concerned about possibly going forward, it's going to be that Wisconsin, Michigan, maybe Minnesota area. I think next week going forward, we're going to come in here Sunday night. We're going to look at the models, you know, and that's going to determine whether that June 10th, we're going to have a closer eye on that June 10th, 11th timeframe, whether that's going to hold true and more chances of precip hit, you know, going forward. So we'll see. I mean, if it doesn't look like it's going to rain, you know, or they back off on some of that, I think this market will take another leg higher, the way it looks to me.
Eric Snodgrass has said, I believe out loud, or at least to me, one of the two, I don't recall which anymore, that June 10th time frame was that point at which, if the rain turns on, things will have changed. But it was really going to hinge in that kind of time frame. And Garrett Toy, I want to turn to you with just that bit of information and ask you the question you wanted asked up front, which was, how bad does the U.S. weather have to be for importers to step in and buy cheaper world supplies? They have been waiting it out to some extent, it appears, and certainly there are cheap world supplies that are available from South America. What are your thoughts?
Exactly right. I mean, we have there's two ways that this market can rally, and that's one where we spook the shorts that have recently established themselves in the feed grains markets, especially corn, beans. That's I'm telling customers is that, you know, you had a bean long out here, and then they're looking at the corn short and wheat short and realizing, you know, what's their exit plan as this market transitions. But the other way is that you actually spook the world cash short, which is, you know, the end users, the buyers, China, and they have a lot of cheap supplies out of Brazil. And the interesting thing is. You know, the South American cash is relatively divorced from the U.S. futures a little bit. You know, we've had this big break, and then the Brazilian farmers kind of picked up selling here. We had seen a firming trend in the South American basis, but now it's starting to ease again. But we need to kind of spook that cash short to clean up that excess supply in Brazil in order to potentially send some demand back to the U.S. Because at this point, we really haven't seen it. I'm sure they're watching it. But, you know, if you look at export sales programs over the last, 4 to 6 weeks, or if you look at combined unshipped corn commitments over the balance of the old crop marketing year, grain exporters are basically like the Maytag repairman. They don't have anything to do this summer. So because South America basically dominates the market. The other aspect of that is feed wheat. You've got wheat, corn trading. Well, we rallied here today a little bit, but, you know, we're at 20-cent premium of wheat to corn. On the cash side, wheat is very cheap on the world side, and that gives the end user a little bit more time to watch this U.S. weather market develop.
So between the four of us, we cover a lot of geographic area in the state of Illinois, and I'm going to stay with you just a minute, Garrett, but I'd like to know, in the last 24 to 48 hours, whether you have rainfall. Garrett, in the far northwestern part of Illinois, and we generally will run a line from northwestern Illinois, Peoria, Champaign, Terre Haute. It's not quite that way, but easy enough for people to visualize. Have you had rainfall in the last 24 hours, Garrett?
Todd, I'll tell you this. I farm, and I've been in the planter the last 2 days replanting soybeans because they were planted May 11th, and we got a heavy 1.5-inch rain on May 12th, and then they baked the following week, and they didn't come out of the ground. It just baked the soil. And I've been sitting in the planter this afternoon, even watching rain go to the north of me, go to the south of me, go to the east of me. It's raining around here. There are pop-up showers just because the humidity's kind of picked up a little bit, but nothing measurable. It's very dry here. The stuff I planted today is going into dry dirt. There's a little bit of moisture down 1.5 inches, 2 inches yesterday, but we could really use a drink. I think that would, around here, there's been a ton of soybean replant. I think a lot of that could have been alleviated if we would have had a drink of moisture. It just hasn't played out that way.
Last 24 hours in the Morton Peoria area, and what are conditions like there, Chip?
Yeah, zero rain. We are drying out. As I look right now, it's a little bit hazy, like something could pop up. Starting to see it in the yards where it's kind of getting, definitely don't need to mow as often. And it's kind of starting to get that look in the yards that it's late July, first part of August, rather than just freshly turned the calendar to June. So it is definitely dry. No rain in the last, really, it's been a week plus since we've had rain, maybe two, and we need one.
Here in Champaign County, we have gotten rain. Yards are still green. I mowed again last night, not as off as I did early in the year, but the yard seems to be in good shape. That's really not, we didn't get a lot of rain. There are places, I think, between here and Bloomington, so, you know, a 40-mile run that got 1.5 inches or 2 inches. My guess is we got about 6/10 where I live in Mahomet, and the crops still look to be in really, really good condition. And Sherman, where you live in Hudsonville, Illinois, you're to the west and south of Terre Haute, is that correct?
Yes, I'm west and south of Terre Haute, about 30 miles. We're just right across the Indiana-Illinois border. No, we haven't had any rain here for quite some time. There was some around last night that was close. Very spotty though. I mean, just like dump on a field here, dump on a field there, especially on the east side of the river, they got, you know, a little over 1 inch, but it's a very small area. We're dry. We've got a lot of corn in that V4 to V8, V10 stage. You know, it's kind of depending on when you planted it. The bigger corn looks to be a little bit better. We do have corn that's rolling, already. You know, so this 90-degree, 94-degree heat coming up, and then this dry stretch going all through next week, it's going to take a toll on the corn. Is it enough to cut hurt the yield? Depending on what stage you're in and how long, you know, it lasts, I think we'll be okay if the rain comes next weekend, and not just a little bit, but we're going to need, you know, a good soaking rain and then for that to continue going forward because, you know, we've been dry. We've been running our irrigation now for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks off and on. And, you know, it's definitely going to be needing a good drink of water.
What are your indications early on for next week and how trade ensues? You wanted to talk a little bit about that, Sherman.
Yeah, next week, you know, like I said, we'll come in here Sunday night, see what the models look like. I suspect that, you know, if they agree with what they're saying, that rain coming in on the 10th, you know, we might start to sell off a little bit. But I also think the traders are also going to start to think, hey, you know, let's see the rain in the gauge actually hit, you know, come and stop, not just be projected to fall. So, you know, we could, you know, trade's going to be based off whatever the forecast says Sunday night, in my opinion. You come in here Monday afternoon, though, you're going to have crop ratings come out. I suspect, as you know, certain states are going to drop again. So that may be a little, you know, give the market a little bit of a bump, but the weather going forward is going to be, you know, what decides what happens next week. I mean, you know, I wanted to mention a little bit about macro markets. You know, that was, we had some downfall earlier in the week in the prices because a lot of economic data came out of China, looked like they were slowing down. You know, it hit the crude oil market pretty hard. We lost like $8 this week at one point in time in the crude market. You know, and that kind of bled over into all the commodities. So what happens, you know, in the outside markets still has an effect on what happens in our markets as well. But it looks like they've passed this debt ceiling. or going to anyway, at least they did in the house. And that has, you know, kind of brought on more risk on type trade today. You know, everything pretty much across the board was higher, from crude oil to cattle. The cattle was up a lot today, you know, to grains as well.
Garrett, how worried or not worried, I suppose, are you about the outside markets, particularly the economies in China, of China and the United States?
It's definitely concerned. So far, I've been cautiously optimistic that I thought, you know, it's already the 1st of June. And I thought that if we were going to have a recession in the first quarter, second quarter of this year, I thought it would be worse off than what it actually is so far. So it's been quietly surprising, if you will. But, I think that I still think that there's some more growing pains that come out of China to the good side. I think the coming out of post-COVID, with clients that we have there, airline travel is improving, commutes are improving, people are out and about. I think that there's still more growth to come out of China, just purely on post-COVID, reopening. And the big concern, though, is this credit situation in the U.S., I'm not sure how that necessarily trickles into the grain markets as a major impact. I mean, I think that these rising interest rates, not just on the banks, the impacts we've seen already on the banks, but also on the consumer. And I think that that's really starting to bite in middle America, where, the higher interest rates and debt load is starting to cause some issues.
This brings me to the demand side of the equation. Chip, you wanted to talk a little bit about this. From the United States, exports have been really poor. Is there any indication that they will turn up, and which of the crops are you most worried about?
Yeah, I think that the bears, rightfully so, have kind of latched on to this decreasing demand story. And, that's been one of the primary drivers of why the funds have decided to get out of their longs and build up short positions, at least in corn, for sure wheat, and at least liquidate a large long position in the beans. And so, in the short run, that is a definite headwind. There's no doubt about it. And there's no denying that, certain sectors, particularly exports, have decreased. Now, there was also some census crush data out. The crush seems to be holding together. Renewable diesel program looks like it's gaining steam. And so there are some bright spots, some green shoots, if you want to call it that. I think, Todd, the long answer to your question is it's still going to depend on crop size. And the thing that we have to remember, the May crop report had that bar pretty high at 181.5 bushel corn yield and 52 on beans. So right now, the end users, we talked about that earlier, are kind of sitting back on their heels saying, this market will still come to me. Demand's not very good. But if you put a threat in this thing, and the first crop conditions report this past Monday had crop conditions already below a year ago, they're probably going to drop again on Monday. You put a threat that we're going to end up 5, 6, 7 bushels, 8 bushels below trend line, which is still overall a pretty big crop, and the supply and demand situation looks much different. And so in the short run, it's definite headwind. The demand it has decreased. We've seen a lot of competition, from the southern hemisphere, Brazil in particular. We've imported, or looks like we're going to import some, European wheat and some Brazilian beans into the United States. But boy, crop size is going to be something that, really could get the end user, off center and get them much more aggressive at securing things if they think there's a threat. And I think that, that extended forecast also leads some margin for error. Right? I can't remember in the very foreseeable past here when we've been trading as a market, a weather forecast that's almost 3 weeks out, and it's getting a lot of publicity. And I'm not super confident in, 3 days out, let alone 3 weeks. So it leaves a lot of room for someone to be disappointed, or for it to pan out and it was right and it's going to rain and we're going to have a crop. But my point with that is there's still a tremendous amount of uncertainty. Demand's a headwind. But if we're going to put threat to yields on dry weather the rest of June, then the end user is going to have to come to the table sooner rather than later.
Okay, so I do want to ask Sherman and Garrett and Chip you as well, but I'll start with Sherman. Some more questions about this, because you are right. The futures markets do look forward. They're 3 weeks out on the weather forecast, at least more than 10 days at this point. 3 weeks would be 21 days, so a lot more than 3 days at this point. We have a USDA report. It's the monthly WASD that's due out. It is highly unlikely that the 181.5 will change. Certainly the acreage won't change. And I say highly unlikely the 181.5 won't change, because the World Ag Outlook Board will simply look at planting pace, probably, and say, well, it was so fast that we're going to stay with this, at least at this point. Maybe in July, if things turn really, really rough, they could come back at it. But August would be the place that they'll have that first crop production report. So are there enough bearish indications in the marketplace that producers need to be really wary of getting themselves awfully bulled up on the dry weather conditions today? And if so, what, if anything, should they be doing about it, given where the crop insurance figures are at? I know that was a long question, Sherman, but the short version are there enough bearish indications, crop insurance in place, that producers should really be still wary?
Yeah. I mean, it's still all going to come down to that forecast. I mean, I think if these weather guys are right, and the trend turns wetter to where we have above normal precip across the entire corn belt for the most part, you know, do we hit that yield estimate? You know, it's possible. It's very possible. And if that's the case with, you know, the lower exports, the big South American crops, you know, this market could continue to go lower at some point in time. You know, I think guys need to take advantage of these rallies that we're looking at right now. You know, pick some points out there. You know, you can talk to us, or some technical objectives, you know, to look at, and set some goals and some prices in with your end users, and have them sitting there in case they get picked off. Because somewhere down the road, I mean, if the weather shows up and the yields do show up, you know, we're more than likely probably going to, you know, venture down and check out the lower side of the ranges we've been looking at, if not lower. So I think guys need to be not falling asleep at the wheel here. You know, buy some puts on some rallies, make some cash sales, get to some recommended levels, you know, and kind of see what happens here. But, you know, like we've been talking about, these weather guys are pretty sure we're going to have a wetter El Nino, you know, coming in here. You know, I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if it does, I think a lot of the bullishness will come back out of this market pretty quick for producers, and we're going to be stuck, you know, with some lower prices.
Garrett Toy, your comments?
You know, I as far as the June WASD is concerned, no. As far as a bullish catalyst, there's probably not anything going to be there. However, at the end of the month, we have the June stocks and the acreage report, and you know, there's still some question marks out there. I mean, the market has definitely pushed their chips to the middle of the table as far as wanting to be short corn and wheat. You know, the corn sell-off was a function of how cheap wheat is. But if the stocks and the acreage report show some surprises, you know, we're North Dakota. We just passed their final crop insurance plant date last week. You know, and according to the March numbers, they still had 1 million acres that were unplanted, and who knows how much of that 40% actually was planted last week, or if it was just fun with numbers. But you know, if we start whittling away on these acreage numbers a little bit, then the market will pay more attention to yield. And the other thing that we still need to reconcile is how strong this domestic cash market is, even in the face of a lack of export business. Is there going to be a surprise in the stocks report at some point that's going to be found? And, you know, it's probably a function of residual and last year's crop size. I think that's about the only thing from a bullish aspect that you have. Seasonally wise, you know, we're coming into, you know, May 10th is usually a good day to make some crop sales. You know, middle of June is usually a good time of, you know, make some crop sales, you know, into your, you know, 80-20 typical seasonal years. You know, as you get further in the June days, you know, the producer needs to realize, you know, are we looking at an 80-20 year, or is there a potential for a, you know, late season rally? And, you know, I think we'll have a better idea once we see those June stocks and acres numbers.
Anything to add here, Chip? And I will mention that the, I believe it was the new crop supply and demand tables for the month of May included what I thought was, and most think, I believe, a very generous feed and residual figure.
Yeah, well, I would add two things. I don't disagree with what the previous comments were at all. I think there's always a risk of getting too bulled up and getting too emotional about hot, dry weather in the summer. That being said, I think crop insurance is a case-by-case scenario, and that certainly plays a big part in someone's risk management plan. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, bought up, you know, various private insurance products and, you know, have 90 to 95% coverage. And so that's a different discussion, but crop insurance certainly has to be part of this. I do think it makes sense. And Sherm said this earlier, you know, sprinkle some offers in above the market at some key levels here on corn and beans, both sprinkle some put offers in there. And play defense while you still have some upside there as well in the case of put scenarios. And, you know, again, to your point, Todd, of your question earlier, there is a question there back to the demand, right? That was a pretty healthy demand number that the USDA had plugged into their May supply and demand reports. Also a pretty healthy yield number at 181.5. That's possible. We've never done it before. So there's likely at some point in the future going to be some give and take between both the supply side and the demand side. It won't be overnight. We won't know all of that on this upcoming June WASDE report. But sometime over the next few months, there's going to have to be a reconciliation of, okay, what's the crop size versus what's the demand? And the end result's going to be the carryout. So there's still a lot of movement potential there and some uncertainty left ahead of us.
Is there anything else that we ought to cover yet today? What's left on the list that we have not talked about? Sherman, anything?
We're talking, you know, talk about demand, and I understand that, you know, exports have been down and everything. But if you look at, say, the July corn contract, for instance, I mean, it was actually higher for the month of May. Not by much, but a dime higher. And that's with China canceling, you know, 600,000 metric tons. I don't know. You know, and corn basis is still good for old crop, still pretty high for old crop. So did they overstate that, you know, the yield from last year? You know, like Garrett said, maybe we'll find that out, you know, here in that at the end of June on the stocks report and see. But that'll be something that could be in the mix going forward.
Well, the one thing that's on my screen this morning that or today that absolutely mesmerizes me, and I know it's not probably a topic we talk about a whole heck of a lot in the state of Illinois, but these fat cattle market just absolutely blew the lid off of the all-time highs here for the June contract. We traded to 175 today. And that's the thing when Todd, you asked me about my concerns about the economy, you know, if there was a market that would be vulnerable to the economy concerns, it would be the beef cattle market, the beef market, and it's not. And I think that's just a pure function of the drought in the Southern Plains and how tight this cattle supply is. And I have not seen a market, maybe corn in 2012, but this cattle market is just absolutely unbelievable. 174.90 for June cattle today.
Anything from you, Chip? And if not, your final word for the day.
Well, I don't think there's anything new. There's certainly a lot of things longer term that can affect it. I'm nervous that in the short run, the next 2-3 weeks, it's going to be weather dictated and weather dependent. The final word is, I guess, would be, like, reiterate what I said earlier. Review what your crop insurance guarantee is. And have that be a backstop. But in the same breath, if we do see a rally back up towards 560 or above on December corn, and you know, back well north of $12 on November beans, be able to have some offers in there, whether that's puts or a few cash sales, and play defense on this thing, because we've seen what the funds can do. If they get any inkling that there's a big crop coming, there's certainly some more downside that we could see into harvest.
Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities, your final word for the day?
Yeah, I mean, I'd go along with what Chip's saying there for sure. I mean, just because our insurance price is $5.90 doesn't mean you have your corn sold at $5.90. So, you know, just make sure you're aware of that. I'm sure most guys are. But, you know, we've seen what happened to this wheat market. You know, if you paid any attention to the hog market, it has just been in a dive forever. So to think, you know, that these corn and soybean prices can't go lower, you know, don't be sitting here thinking that. I think guys need to be proactive. You know, like I said, pick some chart points out, have some prices in. I think guys need to be taking advantage of this rally if that weather forecast does come to fruition and we do get all this rain eventually, you know, to come forward, because, you know, we know these weather guys, they never miss it, right?
Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com, your final word.
Oh, the weather guys are perfect, just like us commodity guys. You know, I think a close above 538.5 is important for December corn. One thing that we study, I mean, yes, we have a spring crop insurance price of 590, but, you know, if you look at historical, you know, yearly ranges for December corn, I think it's very difficult. I think it's going to be very difficult, unless something completely drastic changes, to get back to $6 December corn. We're towards the bottom end of the range, but, you know, based on, we have to have an atypical type year to get back to $6 corn. So, if we get back above $5.50 to $6, is probably a fairly safe level to start looking, doing some marketing, in my opinion.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, along with Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, and Garrett Toy of Ag Trader Talk. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.